You're listening to a podcast on the Black Fur Network.
Like these with me, SJ.
Me, Paul.
And me, Sam.
Hello, hello, guys. We've got a special episode. This is going to be a bit of a surprise and a bit of a different episode because we are doing a little interview. So we have Louis B with us, who is ex-law enforcement, and we've got some questions together that hopefully you guys will find interesting. Welcome, Louis.
Thank you very much,
Sarah. Welcome.
Thank you all for having me. It's much appreciated.
Thank you for coming. It's very much appreciated.
Can't wait to. I've always wanted to kind of do one of these before. So,
is this your first podcast?
It is my first ever. No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure.
You'll be fine. You'll be hooked. You'll be like reaching out, like, where else can I appear?
Yeah. So, try and get some money out of it. No, I'm joking. No, I couldn't resist when Sam reached out and said, do you fancy getting involved in the podcast? I said, yeah, I think that sounds good. So, yeah, see how we get on with it.
Excellent. We love to hear it. Do you want to give us a bit of a general background?
Yeah, of course. No problem at all. Yeah, so, I'll start all the way back to my whole recent history, because I'm sure no one wants to know about the very beginnings. But, more recent times, I was a police officer for a good number of years of my career. And I've very much got involved in everything from uniform policing all the way through to major crime, better known as, I'm sure you guys know, murders and other significant crime types, and moved into the world of serious and organised crime and specifically cybercrime as well. I've very much been involved in quite a few different crime types throughout my career, but the relevance for speaking to you guys today is that I did get involved obviously in that major crime element as well, and I really crossed over from experience in a technical world working with computers as well, previous to the police, so I've got a lot of experience of being basically a nerd, and brought that over into the police as well, and combined the two. So yeah, I've got a bit of unique combination of skills between technical and digital forensics and being in the police as well. So yeah, you might find my ramblings a bit interesting about what I got up to in the past.
Very interesting, especially digital forensics, because that sounds really, really interesting.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think out of what you said though, we all sort of have an interest in different areas of like your previous careers and stuff. Like, is there one that's like really special to you? Like, not special. Yes, I guess special one that you sort of look back really fondly at everything you've done.
Absolutely. So it's different parts, different reasons. So I loved uniform policing because you get to meet every single corner of society, top, bottom, left, right, and everything in between it as well. And, you go from one job in the morning where you could meet, the poshest person in the country possible, 40 acres of land and it's very nice, all the way to the other side of society who may be complaining about, where their wheelie bins are parked in their neighbour's gardens. Not as exciting, obviously. So it's very much that kind of, depth and breadth of society experience there. So I did enjoy that bit, but equally, the more challenge side of it, I suppose, actually digital forensics and, the general going after cyber criminality was the real, that was the fun part where you got the tactics out and the, the more interesting parts. Yeah. But, different things, but really enjoyed all of it.
Excellent. So with the digital forensics, obviously we've had some we've pre-prepared some questions, so there's no surprises for you. So first of all, so outside of regular devices, so phones and laptops and things like that, are there any other devices that hold key digital data that can help solve a crime or at least help assist with the investigation?
Absolutely. And it is, I could talk of this for hours and hours and send everyone to sleep at different times. But I'll tell you one thing, a really good one for your listeners to Google straight away is a concept which is called ambient computing. And it's a new kind of, it's a concept at the moment, but it's going to become a bit of a thing. To explain it very briefly, it's the idea that in the not too distant future, all of us will have various different devices that monitor what we do. That sounds very weird and, you know, George Orwell.
It's Big Brother.
It does sound it, but it's actually for good reason. So the whole idea of ambient computing is it looks at, you know, when you wake up, when you walk into a room, it'll turn lights on for you, you know, it'll boil the kettle for you.
Oh, so it's like routines almost. Oh, right.
Bill Gates' house.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah, exactly. And it sneaks in, you know, it is sneaking into life, your life now. So the things that really are useful to actually be able to solve new types of crime, like in a domestic setting, is a good example, is things you probably have heard of, like Amazon Alexas or Google Home Minis, etc., do a bit of recording. But they're in the, you know, now and onwards, ambient computing, it kind of is here in a weird way, but it's going to grow. And the reason I'm saying about that is because, you know, in the past, it depends what the person's got who's involved, with the victim or the suspect. But if they have, for example, an alarm system in their house, if the victim gets up every day, sets that alarm, goes to work, comes back and unsets it and sits at home, sets it for sleep mode, and they will build a routine about themselves, about how they set their alarm. And that might seem mundane, but if you suddenly then go to find that they've, this person's gone missing or something awful's happened to them, looking at what they did with their alarm is pattern of life. So it might be something really simple and obvious like an alarm system, but when you get really bit weird with all this stuff and more modern, you've all probably already got a bit of ambient computing, and you probably all have in your houses now, that you don't realize is monitoring everything you do, including what you're doing right now.
Oh, we realize.
Oh, Louis, I don't like this.
Don't. I've got Google stuff all over the house. Literally, same. We've got like a Nest in almost every room, or a speaker.
Yeah, we've got
a smart
Alexa's
speaker
everywhere. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's none of that, though.
I mean, the phone's listening to you all the time anyway.
Yeah, the phone's one anyway, isn't it? Yeah.
Not that even, though. It's something that even the most, the elderly have everything. Probably out of guesses. Electric smart meters. So,
what?
Oh, I've got one.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So your smart meter is watching everything you turn on, turn off. It knows the profile of what
course.
That is. Exactly. So you turn your TV on. So you turn your TV on. Great example. It uses a certain amount of wattage, and you will turn it on at the same time every day. You'll watch the same thing. You go to bed at, I don't know, your smart meter will tell me, for about 9:30, 10 o'clock, whatever time it is. You might put one on your bedroom. So you can see through different usage patterns in people's houses what they're doing every day, even to the extent that when they open a fridge, close it, and after a while the fridge will kick in, the compressor will kick in, it will use a certain wattage of power, and that's all recorded centrally. So you can go back and look what everybody does in their houses without actually having to do anything like look through the window.
Wow. Oh, that's insane. That's
crazy,
isn't it? That's crazy.
It is. And if any of you will have Ovo Energy, and this is not a promotion for them, please blank it out.
other energy providers are available.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's the
it.
Caveat. Yeah. But they have, for example, you can log into their portal and see what your energy usage is every day, and it gives you an idea of what they can see. So they tell you when you use your washing machine, you know, and all this different thing. But when it obviously comes to, you know, solving really interesting and extracting really interesting digital evidence, that's really important. So if you know, I'm sorry to say that, we're all sat here on computers, we can work that out. But suddenly if, you know, the computer stops or you don't turn your TV on as normal, you know there's been an interruption to life. And so when you go to actually look at that compared to potentially some verbal evidence that someone may have given you an interview, and maybe it doesn't match up. So, I went out at this time, but actually, in the quietly, you know, in the background as an interviewer, you're watching TV.
So it's like verifying like an alibi potentially, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, digital alibi. It's mad,
yeah, digital alibi, yeah.
That's it. So
it amazes me that people get away with anything these days.
Absolutely.
Especially 100%. With, like, you know, CCTV and, you know, listening devices, speakers and all that kind of thing. And obviously what you just mentioned there about the, you know, the energy smart meter, I think that would be one of the last things that people would think about.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
I wouldn't have not have guessed that, no.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's creepy into life as well, generally. There's more and more of this kind of, you know, ambient computing is the term, the kind of colloquial term for this kind of thing. But it's even, you know, that's quite a direct term. I said at the beginning of this, you know, there's devices in your house that are watching you, ooh, scary, but actually it's already there. And even that you introduce themselves, don't you? So, yeah.
That's insane. it's also really worrying how quite obviously habitual everyone is. It's like it really makes you feel very boring.
Absolutely.
We are creatures of habit.
Yeah. But I was looking at my energy bill the other day, and like it broke it down daily. Because like a stickler for money. I'm like, where have I been spending that? And weirdly, so like weekends are always lower, probably because I'm out and about, but weirdly, every Wednesday is lower than every other day. And don't know why, because
we usually record on a Wednesday. That's weird.
Yeah.
TV's probably off.
not when you've got a child. It's not lower. TV's
yeah, never but I know what it is. I know what it is. Nick's not gaming. Because
Do you think that's what it is? No, don't.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to go downstairs now and spot.
You're going to put him on rations?
Be like, right, if I notice it spikes.
It's March upstairs and turns his monitor off at 8 p.m.
Yeah. Exactly. But that, it is mad how habitual. Like, it's like every, what my point is, every Wednesday it was lower and every weekend it's lower. And I know that's like the most basic form of what you're saying. I know that the smart meter can, information gathered off it can sort of determine the appliance as such, but even from like me layman looking at it, like just a blanket bill, just like, oh, like I already can tell that something's different on a Wednesday.
Definitely. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Do you have an example of someone being caught that way?
Do you know what? I don't, but what I can tell you, actually being caught from the other side of it. My job involved quite a lot of, it's more surveillance type roles to work out what people's normal day-to-day things and what they did was. And this is another pretty crazy one. You can work out how many people are in a house, potentially by how many cups of tea they've had, because it will take longer to boil a kettle for that instance. So we could tell basically, again, lifestyle in people through looking at, you know, energy records by saying, you know, when did the kettle go on in the morning? Chances are it's probably the first thing a lot of people, not everybody, does every morning is go and stick the kettle on. Mm-hmm. And how long it takes to boil is how much water's in it. So if there's, you know, more than usual or it's taking longer to boil, you know there's potentially more than 1, 2, 3 people. And that's very, you know, that's a bit abstract, isn't it? It's a bit out there. But it's still a very good indicator the same amount gets used every day. So how we've done that is to actually profile people to see what they go about and do with their days. So kettle goes on. If they've got electric shower, that'll go on, that'll go off. And then you see, you know, things of like outside of the world, which I have definitely got involved in, which is getting profiling vehicles in a very similar way. It's a whole different ball game as well, in fact, of looking at vehicle forensics in that form. And that definitely has caught people out without a shadow of a doubt. And, you know, I've been involved with convicting people based on evidence from vehicles, much more. House evidence, it's very, you know, like I said to you there, it depends. If you leave the water on a bit longer, that's not going to prove that there's two people in the house.
It's
a very good indicator. So that's why it's always kind of termed as intelligence. So you wouldn't ever really go after someone and say, look at the smart meter on this day. They did it.
Would also have more than one tell. Like, exactly. It wouldn't just be the water, would it? It would be like
multiple things. TV,
multiple things. Oh, yeah.
Toaster on twice, for example. there's things like that. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It would only ever be used for intelligence, and also for the real abstract cases. Maybe domestic murders would probably be a good example of it, where you've got two people that are involved with each other, and maybe, you know, what one partner passes away and the other one says they passed away of natural causes, et cetera, et cetera. But then if you want to then work out, you know, is their story ringing true, and you want to actually understand what they potentially were or were not doing on a particular day, that's when you'd go and profile them using that information and then prove or disprove their account in interview, for example. So you wouldn't ever say, it would never be, you know, you're not going to get this in, you know, some criminal case in court and say, look at this date, this time, this happened. It's going to be very much information around it that will help build a case, if that makes sense. But digital forensics of vehicles, though, different story entirely.
Very interesting. So in the same vein, in relation to technology, so are there any surprising trends in like crime statistics that are linked to the development of technology?
It's a great question. So there's a few big bits. The real obvious ones is that fraud is hugely increasing, massively increasing at the moment. Yeah. And that's kind of really obvious, but when you look at actually some other wider statistics that are stuff that's actually going down, which people conversely wouldn't think if you believe the media solely about it, it's quite incredible to look at what the comparison of the fraud rates that are going up in this country are. It's partly down to better reporting mechanisms, obviously, but equally there is also the element that it is, you know, it's the crime to be involved in, unfortunately, at the moment, is fraud. if you, one, want to make a lot of money, and two, get away with it, which is not great. Not great.
Yeah, people will make like a whole career, you know, just doing fraud, because essentially, I mean, there's hardly any, hardly any repercussions.
That's correct. It's really hard to track them down, pick them up and prove it. It's so resource intensive. Absolutely. And the it is interesting. The more interesting element is actually back a little bit, a few years ago now. It's where the rate of, essentially, well, the rate, some of the big rates of some really common antisocial behaviour starts to drop off. And in fact, one key term of that, everyone remembers the ASBO, the Antisocial Behaviour Order.
Oh, hugger hoodie.
Don't exist anymore.
Well, they started wanting them for a badge of honour, didn't they?
Exactly.
So that didn't really work.
Absolutely. But there's also the interesting fact that underneath it, a lot of the actual, the criminality underneath ASBOs and other related behaviour has actually declined significantly since the mid-2000s and onwards. Mm. And there's an interesting parallel that someone in, well, some of the police statisticians have drawn about that, that there's actually an inverse decline in things like criminal damage to phone boxes, street furniture, et cetera, et cetera, at the same time as the incline in the introduction of BlackBerry Messenger, which is the precursor to WhatsApp for those that may be a little bit younger. And obviously WhatsApp itself really did as well. Now, that's not exactly an obvious direct one, but actually societally, you went from having kids that were disconnected in their own houses.
Yeah.
All they had was BBC 1, 2, 3 and 4 to watch. There's no freebie channels.
Yeah, they'd want to go out and socialise with their friends because there was no other way to talk to them.
Spot on. And they go and beat up a phone box, they're bored. Or, they do things like just mucking about or just causing general havoc around the place. And, you know, and the level of graffiti as well, that all went down as well at the same time as they all started becoming interconnected. And at the same time, rates of other criminality like harassment and some kind of low-level common assault started to increase as their people got better connected, meeting up, having fights in the park with each other instead of beating up the phone boxes. So yeah, that's how criminality changes around technology trends as well, or potentially does. Who really knows for sure? But actually, that's one of the really common assumptions is that the introduction of more social media, etc., it is decreasing certain types. And you know, if you look the simple numbers of it, back in 2005, which was before, obviously before there was any real key rollout of BlackBerry Messenger, and we were still on candy bar phones, text messages, and that wasn't, you know, two-way chat as we know and do today. There was about 1.1 or so million offences of criminal damage, arson, et cetera, et cetera. Last year, less than half that, half a million offences.
What? Error?
Yep. So you're talking half of it.
I wonder if that's got anything to do with like hip-hop culture. Not, I don't mean hip-hop culture, that's just the best way I can put it across, you know, like gang culture is probably a better way of saying it. So these kids, rather than just going out and causing havoc, they're wanting to be a little bit more organized maybe, and they're more interested in selling drugs and actually making some money than just trashing a bus stop for no reason.
Absolutely. They got more enterprising.
They all want to be seen as entrepreneurs. They all want to be seen as winners, don't they? Go-getters. Look, I've got wads of cash and I'm 10.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. So it does.
To be fair, it kind of makes sense because it's going from, it's kind of like going from like a very disorganized set of sort of crimes like vandalism and all that kind of stuff to something, to you're seeing a lot more sort of organized things. That's because the technology is giving you the tools.
To become
organized.
Exactly.
So it's kind of just morphed, really.
It's also shipped that sort of American culture over here too.
Which is where
a lot of this gang culture has come from, is the US. Like they're mimicking them exactly.
Yeah, that's it. It's different crime types, isn't it? There are things that have stayed static, though, you know, over time. So in the same, the murder rate, for example, it's called the homicide rate, it's probably the official term at the moment in this country, is about 11.7 per million population. And that has largely, it's about the same, to be honest with you, as it was in the 80s, the 90s to now.
Mm-hmm.
It did spike massively in the early 2000s, unfortunately, because of the amount of terrorism that was kicking about, obviously, at that time. Happened then. So that, unfortunately, that really does play the figures up and down. Although there was an element of, you know, financial crisis caused a lot more as well, a lot of unrest, etc., back at the time. But it, predominantly, the average of it is about the same. So some crime rates stay exactly the same. Homicides don't largely
That's
go down.
Really interesting. Because this is a good example of how the media tend towards negativity.
Yeah.
Because if you believe the media, what you read online, what you read in the newspapers, you would think it was chaos out there. Like, just people just killing each other left, right, and center.
Absolutely agree. And it's certainly perception. I mean, you have a feed in your hand, all of you do, everybody probably in this feed does as well, about what the worst things have happened in their local area, nationally, etc. You get breaking news telling you, you know, recently there's been the Cardiff disorder that happened last weekend. Yeah. That wouldn't have even been in local media or even probably potentially national media in the olden days, or it would have been a footnote in 6 o'clock news.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I haven't seen much about it, to be honest. Only a couple of posts.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I haven't seen much about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy how things get picked up as, you know, as small as, you know, as that. But yeah.
Absolutely. But that's a bit, really. The statistics, I mean, it's definitely, the linked technology is definitely there. And it also can be, it's actually probably the better way to describe it is technology influencing society, which in turn changes the crime type. It's probably a better way of describing
it. Yeah.
That's it. So it's rather than directly that, but it is still interesting nonetheless. And, you know, the increase in fraud for me is probably that I was mentioned at the beginning, even though
it's skyrocketed over the last 10 years, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And it's the adverse effects that you have as well of, you know, of fraud increasing. So even, you know, criminal damage, arson, other things, they have very obvious outcomes. Yeah, people have really bad days, obviously, you know, they end up big black eyes, or a burnt down house at the worst. But fraud is hidden. So people are ashamed of fraud happening to them. That's the fortunate truth of it. They don't want to go into the media and say, I gave away 80 grand to somebody, and they don't want to do it. They don't want to admit they're a romance fraud victim. So
high reward, low risk, really. It is, what you said earlier. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's awful. And the victims that did deal with victims of it because of digital forensics scared of their devices. And that's mainly actually to prove that it wasn't them that did X, Y, and Z in some cases. Yeah. They've been defrauded of cash and it's been a piece of malware or a piece of malicious software on their phone or computer.
Yeah.
We actually go in there to prove that it wasn't them in some cases. Or potentially it was, not always the innocent in this case, to be honest with you. But that's the other side as well, is to go in and meet them. And it's really, there's some really awful stories. There's people that don't know they're going to lose houses, family. And, you know, it's genuinely really nasty, but it's really, for a better term, criminally underreported by the media because it's not sexy. That's the thing. So.
It's just not interesting to some people. And, you know, victims can be literally any age.
Agreed.
You know, you'd think your most vulnerable in society are going to be the elderly, but also young, like sort of like late teens, early 20s, like college and uni people. They are very susceptible to becoming victims of fraud as well.
But I mean, it's not just face to face. It's not just dialogue. It's like, because my bank account's been hacked.
Mine too.
Hacked, for want of a better word. Yeah, yours. I'm sure a lot of people's have. Mm. And that was just from using a website. It's
absolutely.
I mean, it seems to be so easy to get done.
Mm.
Well, like when obviously at the beginning when you said like the repercussions are low. Is that just because the repercussions are actually low, or it's just so hard to find the people carrying out the fraudsters, basically?
In terms of law enforcement, like there's hardly any convictions or anything like that. From a sort of financial sector, because obviously I work for a bank, Sam works for a bank as well, the only thing that they will potentially get is a CIFAS loading against their details. So CIFAS is a national fraud database, and it can be used by anybody. So you can basically register your details in case you become a victim of fraud. So I'm registered with CIFAS just in case someone steals my identity. So if someone tries to take out like a credit card or, you know, any kind of finance in my name, I would get an alert. But in the same breath, if I apply for credit, it shows up and it gets flagged. So there's basically like an indicator on my, you know, name, address, date of birth and history, basically. But there's a varying degree of CIFAS loadings. So, for example, CIFAS 6 is the one for confirmed fraud. So basically you have to prove that they have committed that fraud and financially gained from it in order to load that that alert onto that person or that company. So it can be an individual or a company, and that will show up again if they apply for credit, you know, anything to do with anything, any kind of financial product, even if it's like a quote or something like that. It doesn't show up on your credit report. It's a separate thing, and you have to obtain it from Cyfas. But yeah, it's very interesting. But there's like varying degrees. So there's like, I think there's 7 or 8 Cyfas categories, but Cyfas 6 is the confirmed fraud one. But yeah, it's interesting,
isn't it? Yeah. It does help, but again, the problem, as you allude to there, is the complexity of it. It's not always cost effective to do it, and then it's always the, you know, at the end of it, who benefits? Can be the bank. And who likes banks? That's the fortunate truth. You know?
And the other thing with the Cyfas loadings, they only last for 6 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they drop off.
Oh. Yeah,
so if that person gets a Cyfas loading for committing fraud, but no law enforcement repercussions, in 6 years, they're home free. They can do it all over again.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the film Layer Cake before?
Yes.
Yeah.
Cracking film.
It's a great film. I love it.
Absolutely. I will tell your listeners the first minute or two. It doesn't give anything away, the first minute or two. But it was interestingly filmed.
It does. It gives away
spoilers.
The first minute or two.
Yeah, sorry. I was about to say switch off now, but please don't. You know, the viewers are any good, isn't it? The really interesting about that film is it was I think it was about 2003, 4, early 2000s. It was filmed anyway, and it goes to show it was really the introduction talks about the history of criminality between the 70s to that period in the early 2000s, and it's a great movie. Definitely recommend it. The key bit that it talks about though is it talks about a couple of chaps who end up in prison who just tried to commit a failed armed robbery, and they're going knock the back of a van off, try and nick some cash, get nicked and get put in prison. And the whole thing it introduces there is that they meet a couple of, as they call it, stoners in prison, and they say, well, what are you in for then? And they say basically that the whole narration of Toffee, which is Daniel Craig does it again, it's his fantastic movie. They talk about how essentially they were only in there for 6 months for moving a couple of million quid's worth of weed. And back in those days, that, you know, it didn't matter. That six weeds, oh well, you know, given literally judges didn't get it, 6 months out they go. So these same criminals went from armed robbery where they were getting 20-25 years to shifting large amounts of drugs. I think personally, this is my view on it, I wonder if we're now in a position where we're moving from people shifting large amounts of drugs to absolute industrial amounts of fraud on the other side of it for the exact same reason.
Very clever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a hint for you, all your criminals out there.
It leads us very nicely onto our next question.
Excellent.
So, with the constant advancements in technology, do you see any crimes becoming very, very minimal or even obsolete, as well as an increase? I know we talked about the fraud, or maybe, an increase in certain types of crime to do with technology.
Definitely. It's actually what technology will enable. There's certain sort of crime types that it will enable to be removed, essentially, from society. I think robbery is going to be a massive one that's going to decline over the next 10 years. So that's direct. Yeah, robbery is using violence to get, or threatened violence to get cash or stuff off of other people. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a big one, namely because of the fact that, and coming up to the next one, which is going to be cash-related offences, tax evasion through cash in hand, etc., which is not crime of the century, but it still is a thing. Anything relating to cash, and that's obviously all because there is a move to cash society without a shadow of a doubt, and that changes far more than people realize about society and criminality, because you can't transfer money one person to another if there's no cash through anything other than electronic means. So that therefore means that we're going to evolve into fraud. And I hate keep saying the F word, but it's true. Fraud keeps coming into it again. So there's going to be ways to transfer money, isn't there?
Even that they've seen coming clearly because of the move to Bitcoin and various other sort of digital currencies.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So the writing's on the wall there. They know it's coming and they're ready for it.
Definitely.
Same with all crime. Crime is like water. It just finds the path of least resistance.
Absolutely. Yeah.
True. That's totally a great way of putting it. Yeah.
That was very good.
Yeah. Very philosophical, Paul.
Yeah,
I love it.
Make the most of that because it'll be the only one I ever.
How'd you feel tonight?
I feel pretty good.
But yeah, it's that. It's not just cash, though. There's other elements to what technology is erasing as crime types as well. I mentioned robbery. It's not just cash. There's obviously mobile phones as well, but they're becoming increasingly useless to people if they're stolen or out of other people's hands. There's an interesting increase in certain crime types for nicking phones. It's not for making money off them, because once it's been nicked and been blocked, it's useless. But actually forcing people, there's a really big increase recently in forcing people to unlock phones or use Face ID to then go and use apps on them to actually go and commit fraud. But it's actually more, that's the nasty type of fraud. That's the unlock that you're transferring me the contents of your savings account or otherwise. Or else, basically. Wow. So that's an increase thing. No, it's quite nasty, that. And there's a lot of it, especially in recent months. In fact, London has reported a lot of this crime type is really increasing because there's big returns, unfortunately, on it. And there's also the question of were they forced or not comes into it. So that adds on to the victim. Yeah. Someone did actually force you to send that 20 grand away.
Exactly, yeah, because they're going to have to deal with the potential for false reports saying, I was, stopped in an alleyway, not at knife point or whatever, and, making fraudulent claims to their bank. And that in itself is fraud, trying to, get money back for something that essentially didn't happen.
Where
would they transfer that money to out of interest? Because it can't be another bank account, because they would be able to trace it.
Oh, yeah. It's set up in advance. And they do tester payments to make sure that they've got the access. So they'll send like a pound to the account and
recently.
Yeah.
With something I had to set up, they had to do that. Oh, what was that?
Some companies do it when you set up a new payment.
Oh, it's eBay. Micro deposits. Yeah, it was eBay.
Etsy does the same thing. If you set up an Etsy shop or something like that, it will credit a few pence or something like 48 pence or something like that into your bank account. And then you have to verify it. It'll have a reference number and you have to verify it to make sure that it's your account that you're using.
The fraudsters do the same.
What I mean is,
they do it the other round.
So would they just transfer the money, then immediately take it out of the bank and just burn that bank account?
So that you can get up to £500 in cash out of a card these days.
Can you?
Absolutely.
It's 200 quid last time I did
They upped it. Because obviously, good old inflation, everything costs more. So you're going to have to set it up now for £500, unfortunately. It's defaulted to 50, 300 ish, as you say, but you can up it yourself to 500.
Yeah, you can, Interestingly, I don't know if it still happens, but you remember when pay at pump first came in at petrol stations?
Yeah.
So when you use your debit card, it only earmarks something like 99 pence.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you the amount of fraud that went on during that time, because people were just going to petrol stations, filling the car, and it's only earmarking 99 pence. And then they were stopping the transaction, or they were withdrawing. So they had a negative balance and it wouldn't debit the petrol because it had only earmarked 99 pence. It wouldn't do the full amount.
This has been a great little fraud
rife. It was absolutely rife.
That is mad. That has changed though, because I think you get £99 every time you go, don't you, these days?
Yeah, they've upped it right up.
So it used to be something like 99 pence. Yeah.
Oh, not pumps, actually. Tills, not pumps.
Yeah.
In shopping centres. I don't like the pay at pump things.
No, I've never used it. I don't think they're not that common now. I don't think. I can't remember the last time I've seen one.
My local Sainsbury's, where I always fill up, they've recently got them in.
Yeah, it's a supermarket.
Yeah.
I use those because I've got Rafe in the car, so I'll use them so I don't have to lug him out or be that irresponsible parent that leaves their child. Sorry for any parents that leave their child in the car when they're paying at the petrol station, but I don't like the idea of it.
Well, that was everyone that was a parent in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, but that's it. I'm a millennial parent. We're breaking, breaking
the places I was left. You wouldn't believe.
I could tell you a funny story about a child in a car, actually, from my policing days, if you'd like.
Please do.
Go for it.
So I used to work in a county force, so outside, and it was mostly pleasant. It's I know I told Sam about this previously. Hot Fuzz, it is basically based on the county I worked in, without a doubt. Without a doubt, it's like reality.
It's a documentary for you, then.
It is, without a doubt, absolutely. I watched it. I was like, yeah, okay, I could have written this.
You just weren't laughing. You're like, and
Edgar Wright's got a lot to answer for.
Yeah, exactly. Had the fourth shotgun on my face that day. No, it's not quite that bad. But, you know. I've driven to a car park and I saw the most hysterical mother in the world. I'll probably politely call it dancing around her car. She had a Mini, and she was very upset. And I got out and said, "Hey, all right." And she said, I've locked my baby in the car. Well, technically, the baby had locked the baby in the car. So she made the fatal mistake of, well, now, what's the best thing to keep children quiet? I hear it's to rattle
keys,
things, isn't it? Keys, exactly. Keys. So what you shouldn't do is when you get out the driver's side of the car and give the keys to your baby to keep it quiet. And obviously, you can't have, not a video of this, bit the baby bit down the keys and locked the car with the little baby inside of it. That's quite bad. And she's obviously, and then she's seen me turn up and think, and the worst thing is, you know, a big uniformed police officer turning up and thinking, child neglect, they're taking my baby.
Yeah.
Not, you know, crikey. Got the child catchers. And so looking at us thinking, goodness me, what the hell, you know, this breaking into vehicles is luckily not my forte. And she was absolutely hysterical. So I said, I had a colleague with me, and I said, right, how am I going to get into this? I couldn't work out what to do. The fire service, God bless them, they don't come out for this kind of thing, would you believe it? That's another podcast entirely for this. And so I thought, right, that's it. So what I ended up doing is got to take the initiative for these things. So I left my colleague with the poor lady to reassure her. The baby was fine, was perfectly happy. It wasn't a particularly hot day. And I drove around the town that I worked in over and over again until I spotted an AA van and pulled it over. And said, do you want to earn some points? Drag this chap over, and I won't tell you how, but he managed to break into this Mini with a number plate, just a number plate, and only, and got the baby out of it. But yeah, that poor mother, she was so upset, would you believe, but so happy with it happened.
A number plate?
Yeah. Oh, I'll tell you, why not? No, it's paradise, isn't it? If you bend a number plate in half, you can fit it down the window sill of a Mini and pop the window open, because they've got rimless windows at the top of them. And he just poked the hanger in and hooked the keys off the baby's lap. Out it came. Uh-huh. Yeah, don't buy a Mini.
You would have learned so many little tips and tricks. Like, you could be like a criminal mastermind if you were that way inclined.
I know.
You're just like, you've got this whole repertoire.
Some policemen do end up that way.
That's actually very true. That's a very good point.
Absolutely. Welcome to this section of the podcast, How to Break into a Mini. That's
the best thing about that is every car has two number plates. If you get it wrong once, you can try the back one.
Brilliant.
Oh my God.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Terrible, isn't it?
So I'm kind of like interested. I'm a personal kind of person. So throughout your whole, every job that you've done, which case has stuck with you the most, and why?
Yeah, I'll tell you quite a serious story of this, and it's the one that stuck with me the most. And there's numerous jobs you can, I'll cover it off the kind of category wise first before I go to that one example. You get jobs that stick with you because they're the worst thing you could ever see. Stuff that involving people that have passed away in bad circumstances in a lot of cases, to jobs involving children, which I'll say no more in the matter about that. And there are others that are what could have, how this could have gone really wrong. And that's one, this is an example I'll talk about here. And there's examples that stick with you because they were brilliant, as in you get to go lock up really nasty people, or it was just damn fun, to be honest with you. In some cases, they were genuinely fun. But yeah, I'll get serious again. Serious for this one. So this, I was on, again, I was same Hot Fuzz village I mentioned earlier. I was on patrol in, and there was a call came over the radio saying that someone has just kidnapped a child over the fence of a local primary school in the middle of the day on a random Tuesday.
Wow. Jesus.
And then the second call came in on that one, because it's quite hard to explain. The use of police radios is never realistically portrayed on television programs, but essentially, to briefly explain it, you get talk groups for different areas. So you have a talk group for different regions of the county you work in. So you have a whole east-west region for bigger, larger organizations, like the Met, for example. They have one per borough, for example.
Yeah.
And so typically you hear what's going on, about what everyone else is doing any given time. It's a bit like listening to an actual radio station, but hearing exactly what everyone's going to. So they'll be saying, you know, brief details of calls that are coming in. So 909 calls are taken by the call takers are passed over, and you'll hear those jobs going on in the background. So you always know what all your colleagues are up to at any one time. And if they start panicking, they can talk on the same channel. We can all hear it in the local group and start going to it. So this call came in, and it came in to say, is anyone available for this, which is a grade one, most important call, as you can imagine, that you can get. This allegedly someone spotted a child being kidnapped over a fence. And then a second call came in, and the call taker provider said that this has actually come from the head teacher, confirming that something has gone on. They're still trying to do it. They're basically doing a register of all the kids at the moment to work out if it was gone, because they can't work out if anyone has done, but something has happened because all the kids are screaming and someone has called it in. So something's going on. And I arrived at that scene, and as you can imagine, it was total. I was on my own at that stage, and it was absolute madness. Everybody was running up and saying, pointing direction of around the corner from this, and you say, is anyone missing? Just words coming out of people. I don't know. Is anyone missing? Yeah. Words. But what you can ascertain from that is, if they're not saying this person's missing or that person's name is missing, they probably haven't worked out if anybody is missing yet, and the chances are hopefully no one is. So with that in mind, I ran around that corner looking where they were all pointing towards, and there was nobody, nothing there. So just keep running up there, seeing what's going on. And it starts, you know, getting to the stage where it's getting, you know, left, right, up, down, could have gone anywhere. And by this stage, there's people turning up, and the police all over the place. And, you know, you can hear sirens, as you do when you get bigger, since you start to hear them all running around. And I walk around the corner, and this guy is jogging towards me, looking a bit out of breath. He takes one look at me, I take one look at him. And it's a proper, you know, classic Nicholas Angel moment where you lock each other's eyes, you know what's going to happen next.
Did you wink at him? Did you wink at him?
Straight into a garden fence.
That's all right. got a tin of beans out and knocked one out. No, I didn't do that, obviously, so I didn't knock him out. So basically, he didn't have a child with him, which is good in one respect, but was still running through my head, my goodness me, has he, you know, taken a child and then left the child somewhere else? There's all those things.
Yeah.
And
locked him in a van, a car, anything like that.
Absolutely. And I said a few choice words to him about what exactly I wanted them to do in, you know, the Queen's English, shall we say, at the time, to say, don't move. And he took me a bit more seriously. I think he would have, if I hadn't sworn at him quite loudly, to be honest with him, told him exactly where I wanted him to go. And I got him into handcuffs, and I took him to the car, and I said, and, you know, arrested him, obviously, at that point, read him his rights, as the Americans call it, and made sure he's, you know, he's under caution. That's the most important thing. So anything he says from that point forward, which obviously the pertinent question for me is going to be, have you kidnapped a child and where are they? Tell me immediately. Mm. But obviously under caution, that's a key element as well for if they incriminate themselves after that point. So yeah. So right. This individual, really, this is the odd bit, really nice bloke. Really friendly. And it's not what you expect at all from all this whole situation that's just happened here. And I said, what's happened then? He says, oh, I thought she needed help. Who? Oh, the little girl. Which little girl? Oh, the little girl in the school. Okay, where is she? Oh, I don't know. So, okay. All getting a bit strange, but really nice chap other than that. So take him away to the car.
Kidnapping a child.
Exactly. That's the really confusing part. You don't expect it, do you? But that's the weird truth about it. They are quite generally okay people to deal with, which is very disconcerting.
It's because they're cowards, I think.
Well,
for the most part.
This is it. I'll get him back to my car and pop him in the back of it and wait till my colleagues turn up to work out what's gone on. And we've ascertained no one's missing. And they get an account from one of the young kids there to say that what he kind of described, which was he tried to grab someone, one of the kids, over the barrier. It didn't quite happen that way. And he didn't manage it and left and ran off. So that's okay. Attempted kidnappings happened that way. So take him down to the police station. And this is where you've got to keep a slightly open mind about what's actually gone on. Because if you instantly think, worst person in the world. Obviously, you know, he's a pervert. He's trying to kidnap a child. You might miss what's actually going on here. And a lot of assumptions, I'll be open to say, a lot of assumptions were made about the police officers in the station that I arrived. Because it's my prisoner. I arrested him. It's my responsibility until I got him handed over. And what I noticed was that he was starting to, in the rearview mirror when I was driving there, it's a key bit of when you're a police officer, looking in that mirror and seeing what they're up to in the back. You can tell a huge amount from people's behaviour when they think that they're not looking at you, but they're looking at the back of your head. And he was flitting his eyes around all over the back of the car and looking around. And then he was talking at such a volume that you couldn't hear what he was saying. And he was not intending for anybody to hear what he was saying either. And he kept talking really quietly. And when I got to the station with him, I got him in front of the custody sergeant, who, I'll be honest, took a very dim view of him and his alleged crimes, because the custody sergeant was a dad, and you know, a lot of people would have an instinctive reaction like that.
Yeah.
And he was given very short shift, to be honest, didn't have much time for him. But this guy, he kept acting really strangely, and I said, "Are you okay?" And he said, "Yeah, yeah, fine. Sorry about that. Yeah, I'm fine." He just kept acting like he was a little bit away from it, and what I come to realise is there's something he's not quite right. I'm not a medical professional, but I know that there's something more to what's going on here. And my best man at my wedding, he's a mental health nurse. He's one of the chief mental health nurses for the region that I work in as well. Jumping forward the story slightly, I called him up and described the behaviour that I saw with him at the time. And after this guy was in the cell, and said, "Have you got any immediate thoughts on this?" I'm not asking to do any kind of diagnosis over the phone, but have you ever seen this before? And he said, "Schizophrenia, without a doubt."
Really? Like that?
Yeah. He said that's the classic weird behaviours you get from schizophrenia, with the kind of the weird and wonderful behaviour that he was exhibiting. So when I took him into his cell, he started to describe how he could see the spiders everywhere. He said they were all over
God.
Me. He said you could see them crawling out from the grates, and they were crawling out all up to him. And he kept essentially progressing worse and worse than this. So when looking into this guy afterwards and seeing what's he all about, has he got any previous, has he got anything at all? He had no criminal history at all, lived at home with his parents, he had a job, goes to work every day, nothing unusual about him at all, not even known at all in the police systems, absolutely no reason to think anything would happen at all here. And after 4 or 5 days of him being locked up and essentially he was remanded, obviously you can imagine, for danger to kids for obvious reasons. And after a lot of medical assessments, etc., they diagnosed that essentially he'd woken up that morning and got schizophrenia, essentially, or it had triggered, what the better term of it is, and that's exactly how it exhibited on that day.
Oh, wow. So it's like
show up in your 20s, right? Schizophrenia.
Yeah.
And I think it doesn't at all after your 20s. I think if you're not schizophrenic before the end of your 20s, then you won't be.
I suppose that's when your brain stops developing, isn't
25.
It?
You're 25, right?
25, yeah.
25, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, your frontal lobe isn't until you're 25.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I think that it's crazy to make life decisions at 16.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's plenty of things you shouldn't do until a lot older.
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely. But that was the reason I say that stayed with me is because that was the range of emotions of thinking, my goodness me, what could have been had he actually had that child away? You just don't know.
You don't know. Yeah.
What did he do with the girl? Sorry. So he went to, he thought she had spiders. Did he think she had spiders crawling all over?
Yes, that's exactly really? What he was. He thought he was walking past that and he thought that she was covered in spiders and had to get them off of her.
Oh, wow. She was still in the playground. He literally just went up to her.
Grabbed her feelings to try and get the spiders off of her. But obviously,
and then ran off.
Yeah, exactly.
I bet he was so confused, though, as well.
He must have been really confused. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
It terrifies me, that. That and Alzheimer's.
Dementia and Alzheimer's. I'd be terrified. It's like being trapped, isn't it?
But how fascinating, because like you'll go from, like you said, like automatically probably judging and being like, this guy's a bit of a sleaze and a pervert and all, to probably having empathy, sort of like, you've woke up and don't even know what's going on. Well, you think spiders are everywhere, but logically...
It's scary, isn't it?
Unfortunately, people, like, we all do make snap judgments.
Yeah.
Pretty much on the spot.
It's true.
We do.
Yeah.
It's hard not to.
I totally agree. And of course, you know, it's unconscious bias. It's very much conscious bias. Yeah. I think in this example,
yeah.
you know, you,
yeah. What, yeah.
You, there's and there's 99% of the population would make that same assumption, and you know, probably rightfully so, that they probably were getting it right 99% of the time. But
yeah. You're automatically going to think the worst, aren't you?
Yeah,
exactly. I do. Yeah,
you're right. But it's I watched a video about something the other day. I can't remember how I came across it, but they were saying that your brain has evolved and has sort of like trained itself to think the worst and to think and to focus on negative negative things, because that's where the threat is. That's where the threat is, and that's why your brain automatically thinks the worst and focuses on negative things, because it's a survival thing, because you think it's like your body is preparing itself, you know, to fight or flight kind of thing. Absolutely. And survival and all of that. Really interesting.
Do any of you have that thing where you sit there and you think, oh, I'm not worried about anything, and then you actively try to find something to be worried about?
Yeah, I'm always worried about something, mate. I don't think there's ever a point. I'm never worried about even the most insignificant thing.
I'm exactly the same as you, Sam. You should try renovating a house. It just gives you continuous worries.
Permanent state of anxiety. Louis, do you think though, given your career and stuff, that you are kind of you would make those snap judgments the same as we do, or do you feel like you're more open minded, or do you feel like you're worse?
Oh, that's a great question. That's a really good question. It does depend on the circumstances. I find myself to be much more questioning of weird circumstances than I ever would have been. That's probably the right way to say it. So if something doesn't feel quite right and it's a bit, and it seems obviously awful, then yeah. But having said that, you know, there's other crime types, like, you know, individual knife crime, for example. I'm never going to not make a direct assumption about why someone's carrying a knife in public, because
there's only one reason.
Exactly. There's certain things. Yes, I absolutely agree. But it's not like I go around questioning absolutely everything as a result of it. But you do though. I've definitely learned that. And another brief example of similar, but really challenged what I thought was the case or not, was a young lady that I met who. She called the police to say that she thinks that her ex-boyfriend had snuck into her bedroom. And so I went and met her and told me the circumstances of it. And she said, I've been taking a lot of sleeping pills and, you know, I have been seeing things generally anyway, but I'm still not sure if I've seen my ex-boyfriend when I think he came into my bedroom this night at this time. And it was, you know, and again, another great example. You could easily write that off very easily, could they? It's a very long story behind it, but the long story short is I took a very detailed statement off of her about that, because she wasn't sure. And again, benefit of the doubt, thinking even the most obvious explanation might not be it. And that got handed over to, because it was essentially a burglary, potentially. It's a bit of an oddball, because this is the weird one. There's not really an offence of sneaking someone's house and then going out again in the same way if you've got a key. If you think about it, the offence isn't actually that obvious. You've really got to think about it, you know, about what it is there. So, and especially
trespassing is not really a crime, is it? No, so you can't really do anything for that.
It's a civil offence, exactly. It's not a criminal offence. And when we got to the point of, you know, I handed this one over CID because it was quite a potentially serious one, especially the circumstances of what it was. And the previous one was as well, but this one was was handed over. And they questioned the boyfriend informally. Didn't go and arrest him for it because of the circumstances are a bit odd. Questioned him about it. And this is actually where, you know, the pattern of evidence comes into it. And he gave an explanation of what he was doing on that particular night. And that included a trip to Tesco's, included a trip to go and do X, Y, Z. And CID being CID, they go and rip the story to pieces and work out what they could evidence digitally, funny enough. And go to the easy one for that whole story was to go to Tesco, get CCTV. And see did he buy anything, what did he buy, and then come back if he did buy something from there, get the receipt pulled off and say what did you buy from there, and see if he lies about it for any reason. And his timing was out on the trip to Tesco's because he said he was there, but he was there at a different time. But he also said that he got something that he didn't buy from there as well, which is a bit odd. Why would you do that? you know, why would you say you bought eggs when you bought flour type thing? You know, it's a bit beyond being forgetful. You've got something serious as that. You'd just say, I can't remember what I bought from Tesco.
Yeah. Like
that. Just making up falsehoods potentially. And after the fourth interview, after, you know, the consecutive bits, he coughed the fact that he had snuck in there. He had a key and he had gone into this bedroom and he wanted to go and check on her.
Mm.
Yeah.
Couldn't have text.
Exactly. Couldn't have text, obviously not. Yeah. He wanted to go and check on her. Yeah. So it does, again, that's another really good example where the obvious outcome for that is too many, you know, she takes too many sleeping pills or
she says
herself hallucinating about it. But there's also the element of people don't call up and they don't, I mean, it take a lot for anybody of us to go and call the police about something.
That's true.
That's true.
Exactly.
Fair play to her. The police in my life.
I don't think I have, to be
touch
honest.
Touch wood. Yeah.
I don't want to have to.
Yeah, I don't think I have. But fair play to that girl for, even though she wasn't sure, you know, she said she'd taken a lot of pills and for sleeping and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Fair play to her for calling the police.
100%.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, because that, I mean, what could that have led to? I mean,
exactly. This
one time maybe just snuck in and left, but what would he have done the next time or the time exactly. after?
But it's also nice to actually hear the, like, we hear so much negative things about the police, sort of like where there are reported things that you would sort of be like, that's really minimal, and they kind of brush it off. We've covered loads of cases where things haven't been checked up on or taken seriously. So it's actually nice to hear, like, something obviously not necessarily insignificant to her, but in the grand scheme of, like, all the different crimes you could report, you know, it could be one that's quite easily put under a load of paper or whatever.
Yeah,
so for it to actually be like, so like, no, it was looked into and like seriously, and this came out of it, it's a good thing to hear.
Agreed. And
especially as there were sleeping pills involved too, because like a lot of people would just go, all right, well, they did make Roseanne incredibly racist on Twitter, so yeah, they might have made you see things.
Absolutely.
But this great is why example, I keep my location
great real
date
world
on
example
all the time.
There.
Well, you know, what can I say? I'm current.
You are right, Sam. At the moment, the narrative is it's very negative against the police. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I might be totally wrong with the statistic. I'm sure it's about 170,000 in the country. They didn't all start becoming crap at their jobs overnight, and they didn't all start not caring. And you know, I joined it because I actually wanted to go and one, have interesting stories to tell to your good selves, but also because generally, you actually want to go and lock up bad people. That is what you come to do. That it's
got
to
be really satisfying to do something like that, you know, especially when you know you get a conviction and you know you see it through to the from beginning to end. Like, it must be, you must feel very accomplished and quite proud, and you know,
absolutely,
you definitely do. You, of course, you do, absolutely, especially when it's, you know, and someone turns around and thanks you for it, even if they don't, you know, it's still the fact that, you know, you can say actually that's made a difference. And you know, especially with serious, you stop someone from going and doing serial criminals, stopping them in their tracks and be able to save a lot of people from loss, etc.
Yeah, definitely.
It is satisfying, definitely, but it has a lot of downsides, obviously. That's probably a whole other podcast itself. But,
no job is perfect, there's absolutely always a downside.
Okay, so I just wanted to ask, because I've listened to other police officers on other podcasts, and a lot of them say that very early in their career, like literally within the first few months, they're not required but sort of encouraged to go to a post-mortem. Did you do that?
I did, yes.
Oh,
did you really?
I've got a hell of a story here.
can you talk about it?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Okay, go for it.
Excellent. So yes, so you're quite right. It's encouraged to go and see a post-mortem, but it's not like, you know, you must go and do that, but it's a good idea to, because you know, it's better off if you have the option of running out the room because you don't feel too well off what you see, because it's, you know, it's certainly an interesting process, that is
what
for
I've heard. Running out of the room is pretty common.
It depends what you've seen before. So it helps in some respects that my mum runs a funeral parlour. So I
that would definitely work. Yeah.
It does help massively, massively help.
Wow.
But yeah, that's another story again. So So in this instance, I was actually on my attachments. You do attachments to different departments in when you did your first 2 years, traffic, CID, cyber, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. And I was on my CID attachment for this one. And essentially, an individual who... When individuals die in certain circumstances, they have to have home office postmortems, which I'm sure you know is the next level up. So all of the things on your podcast will always be home office.
Yeah.
There's probably a full postmortem. We'd have the home office ones are reserved for the really serious stuff and death in custody, and that includes prisons as well, if that makes sense. It's only the top. The majority of cases you look at will be home office because they're really significant. And the main difference there is that the home office pathologist is actually, there's only very few of them in the country, very, very few. And so the same small group of people, very weirdly, do all of the postmortems for probably the vast majority of major cases in the UK. So there's a group only 5-6 of them that will actually do all of that, which is interesting. And this individual, he was a prisoner, and essentially he had to have a postmortem because he died in prison. Simple as that. It's death in custody, but then obviously imagine a lot of prisoners do die in custody. And I got to see his postmortem taking place. The reason it was so fascinating is for the weirdest part of it was that when he was taking the guy's skull off, so that's done with a Dremel multi-tool, want a better term, around, I'm sure everyone can see around the top of the forehead, sorry, bottom of the forehead, I should say, around the top there, he went around it with a Dremel. Didn't work, wouldn't come off, so he was trying to push it off, wouldn't come off, went around it again, wouldn't come off. And this is when it starts getting a little bit B&Q DIY, because he starts getting the tool bag out to see how he can remove the skull, obviously, because it's come off.
So, hammer and chisel.
Yeah, exactly. Spot
not
on.
A circular saw, too much mess.
Exactly. So this is where he said he's very kind to look over to the viewing gallery where we were and said, I'll try and aim downwind from you. Thank you, mate. puts the chisel in, starts literally smacking away,
as if
he's demolishing his bathroom, basically, on this chap's skull, which was very strange to see, because obviously this is a human being. And you wouldn't see that in any other circumstance ever. It's not a real one anyway. So seeing that happening, and he was going and going and going and going and going, and he had to go round the skull, and he was doing this for about an hour or so.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
It was phenomenal. And he was obviously doing
a really thick skull.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's been in prison.
Wow.
So,
oh my God.
So they went round and did that, and obviously you see all the details of, what it takes it all out. And what the key bit for obviously this was it a death in custody because there's neglect of while he's in custody, i.e. was he not checked on? And there's obviously, as you know, with prisons, the duty of care is on the prison service, obviously, while they're in prison, for obvious reasons. So they're looking to ascertain, was it natural causes? Was it something else? And this guy, when he got his skull off, and they took his brain, had a look at that, nothing abnormal there, apart from the absolutely enormous skull, which for reference, from what I recall, it looked from where I was stood about to be an inch thick, but it might be a bit of an exaggeration.
Wow.
It was proper, this skull. It was massive, this guy.
Is that abnormal? Did he say it was abnormal?
I know the skull is very thick anyway.
Yeah.
I knew it was thick, but an inch?
Jesus. Wow.
I think this guy was, he was a particular kind of, he had a familial background of lots of crime, so I don't know whether there's some kind of weird physiological linkage behind that or not, but he did make mention that it was unusually huge.
He ran Raiden Banks with his head.
Yeah. Just use his head as a battering ram.
Yeah, he just runs at the door.
Well, he'd been in for his whole life for murder, so you can only absolutely. Oh, he was a lifer, this guy. He was not going to be getting out for a long time.
Wow.
But the post-mortem side of it, the other crazy part is that he had heart problems anyway, and that was the most likely reason that he had passed. It was nothing more to it, the fact than that he potentially did work out exactly how he had passed, but it's probably some kind of natural cause. There's nothing, it's no big interesting story behind it, apart from the gore, obviously, which is the best part. Yeah. So when they took his chest cavity off, which involves bolt croppers on each rib, so I won't do the sound effect for your listeners.
Crunch. And snap. Then they get that thing and they wind it and it's like a jack, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it opens.
Yeah, like sunroof. Ooh.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, we're not laughing at dead people, by the way.
No, no.
No, but the process is.
You need to laugh sometimes in this conversation.
Yeah, it's a dark, dark subject. If you don't have a sense of humour, then it's probably not for you kind of thing. You kind of need to like detach yourself that it's a human being almost. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's weird. Like these guys will probably tell you, like I've been obsessed with death and murder for ever since I can remember. And I read a book a few years ago. She does a podcast and she's done TV shows and things like that. Her name's Carla Valentine. Her book Past Mortems is absolutely brilliant. And she's a mortuary assistant or a technician or something like that. There's like a technical term for it. But yeah, she's talking about in a very sort of almost like slapstick comedy way.
Yeah.
You know, like her and her colleagues are having conversations about, oh, where's this guy's eyeballs? Oh, they're in that bag with his lungs and his, you know, tongue and whatever, and just like real, it just sounds like a comedy show. Absolutely. And it's just, and it's, you know, they're cutting up.
You kind of
people.
Have to disassociate to an extent.
You
though,
do.
Yeah. Like,
you
absolutely
do.
Otherwise,
yeah.
You just, otherwise, no one would be able to do that job.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
I often think that with Madeleine McCann's parents, everyone's always saying, oh, they're so cold and detached. But then you think they're both doctors.
They're
so
both
they probably
doctors. Yeah.
Are very,
yeah, very
used
true.
To being cold and detached.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you do, because it becomes as normal as, you know, anything else. I mean, it's the same extent, really, I suppose, as, you know, when you're a vegetarian seeing someone's cooking yeah. up a chicken. Do you know what I mean? It's, yeah. it's vile to them because they don't do it and they detest the. I'm talking potentially here. Mm-hmm. It's vile because they don't do it and they couldn't ever imagine themselves, you know, stuffing a turkey, yeah. for example. But to, you know, people that me are meat eater, doesn't bother me in the slightest. I just get the turkey on the table, do what you yeah. do, and it's become second nature. I know it sounds weird to say it's the same as that, but once you see enough dead bodies, including freshly dead bodies, to be frank, yeah. as well, it just becomes it is fact of life. All of us are going to die. We're all going to be on that slab one day, aren't we? So
exactly.
Not me, Louis. I'm going to live forever.
Oh yeah.
Yes,
tell me a secret.
Are you going to be like Isabella Rossellini in Death
yeah,
Becomes
that's,
Her?
That is my life dream.
That's the goal.
That is my. I mean, to be fair, who would what female? What straight cis? Oh my god! All the politically correct words. Female wouldn't want to be Isabella Rossellini in Death Becomes Her.
I don't know. I definitely would. Definitely would.
I'm the exact opposite. I look forward to the sweet embrace of death.
Oh, it's just see the thing is, like, I'm kind of the opposite side, Sarah. So I'm like fascinated and everything with it, but I cannot deal with the fact that I'm gonna die one day, or that like people I know are gonna die. I really don't like it. My brain goes into that deep pit, and then I go into like this weird anxiety, and I need someone to calm me down. But yeah, I will listen to and watch true crime, and I've got a dark sense of humor, and I love anything weird and macabre. So it's really, really up. But at the same time, I'm like, la, 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 nope. I'm going to live forever with the unicorns on cloud nine.
I always think I really like sleeping and I really hate people. So it's basically win-win, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fully on board with that. Fully on board.
Oh, dear. This got really dark.
Isn't it?
I mean, it's a crime podcast.
It is a podcast about murder.
Very true.
It is a podcast about murder.
Every episode.
That's really true, isn't it?
We have done Catherine Knight.
Yeah, true. Out of curiosity, Lou, what is your opinion and view on, like, the... I guess, like, how big true crime is now. Like, obviously, we're here and it's like part of our daily lives, guys, isn't it, really? Like, we're always sending each other, like, have you seen this now? Or there's this documentary. And you do become desensitized in one way. But obviously, it's a really serious, dark topic. Like, what is your, are you sort of like, nah, mate, you're a bunch of weirdos? Or do you know what I mean?
You
or
can you say kind of, it. There's no understand? Judgment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
No,
yeah, we embrace it.
No, not at all. I'm a beer. I thought that. No, I think it's in a golden age now of, especially in certain areas of the world where they have very open records about this stuff. So actually be able to search it, get people's opinions on it, and loads of people finding all of this information about really big cases. It's a golden age to be able to understand all this stuff. And I think it's great. The key problem with it, though, is almost like the there's been a few big cases recently, like Madeleine McCann's a great example, and I've fortunately forgotten the poor lady that fell into the river down in the southwest recently.
Oh, Nicola Bulley.
That's the one. Thank you very much. There's examples of where it, I'm not saying you guys are anything wrong, doing anything wrong with this tool or the general, the true crime element, but when you get the general public, probably a better way of saying it, that go too far, and the media as well, it's the worst part of it. It's because there's too much guessing work, and you know, you're talking about like they're trying to size up the dog's reaction to her owner falling into a river.
The
Daily Mail.
It's when there's interference,
and there's lots of it.
I mean, we live in a time now where everyone's waiting and trying to catch out someone else so they can ruin their life in some way. So the police are like front and center for that. Like they're obviously, especially with the Nicola Bulley thing, because we were going to cover that. But we decided not to because mostly because it was so much speculation and so much like I felt sorry for her partner and like I just feel like it would have been we thought it would have been in bad taste, I think, to talk.
We covered like the main sort of like news highlights, but it was literally like a few weeks after it happened, and there was hardly any information. It was obviously all speculation.
We just discussed the facts of the case. We didn't try and speculate.
And that's
That's the right way to do it, because you know, at the end of the day, there's a very, in my opinion, again, there's a very thin line between actually looking at facts of a case, and that when you look at things like court documents, there's a lot of people that have carefully considered that, police officers that do know all the context of particular case or as much as they can know about it, and they've discounted things through slow, steady days worth of, you know, like all the method I talked about at the beginning of this call, like they may be looking at their smart meter, for example, and working out that's not possible, and then they won't put that piece of evidence through to court. But yeah, the media don't get that. They don't get anything at all. They'll get abstract bits. So that's when you get, you know, you get the Daily Mail looking at what the dog was doing. Oh, look, there's no mud disturbed on the set. It's all guesswork then, isn't it? But the difference between, in my opinion, examining a really settled case that's been through court is that you have considered, weighted evidence that's been properly thought through and discounted if it's not relevant, or actually it's good stuff that's gone through there, versus if you look at live stuff, unfortunately these days, you're only going to be, I think, barking up a media shaped tree.
So
everyone wants don't fuck with cats situation, don't they? They all want to be the person that sees something and then goes, oh my god, and then you get all this. But it's not. That was a documentary for a reason, because it's a minority. It's not.
The problem with these internet sleuths is that they tend to do a lot more harm than good. Like they're always on forums accusing people and like doxing people, and it's a horrible world, really.
Because people don't come back. Some people just don't come back from things like that, you know, if they've been singled out as a suspect and things like that.
Absolutely.
You don't know the toll that it's taken on them. You know, they don't even know evidence, you know, it's all circumstantial and things like that. And people, the amount of reach that they go through sometimes is just phenomenal. Phenomenal.
I mean, who was the TV presenter? He used to do, is it Matthew Kelly? Kelly was accused of inappropriate behaviour with a child. It was proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was false and didn't happen. He never worked on TV again. One accusation.
I'd say that.
That's why I hate jumping on people like this. You know, when people get accused of things like this Schofield thing at the minute, everyone's speculating about that and like... You can't really do that. You've just got to wait for evidence. You can't just accuse people with no evidence and ruin people's
lives. Just love a scandal, though, don't they?
Get rid of them.
And they love a witch hunt.
That's terrible.
And the media stirs everybody up into a frenzy, particularly, you know, the tabloids, Daily Mirror, and Daily Mail, and all of that ilk. And it just whips people up into a frenzy because it sells them newspapers. It's money. That's literally it, making money off people's misery.
And it's,
not misery, but you know.
It's simple. It's the monetization for the media in the olden days would have been you know, writing out a good newspaper that was printed at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they'd get people up and they'd read it calmly, collectively. That's not great, you know. So-and-so's died, okay. But the key reason now is that, you know, we'll have our devices next to us that are pinging us every second something's happening in the world. I mean, I think, Tina Turner's died, apparently.
Yeah, Tina Turner's died.
There we go.
Literally, just before I logged on.
Oh, wow.
Somebody sent it to one of my WhatsApp groups, and I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, she was 83. Today or yesterday, I can't remember.
Ralph Harris died.
No, it wasn't him. Yeah, I heard about that, but it wasn't him. It was, don't remember. As an actor, I can't remember.
Oh, it was Ray Stevenson.
That's it, Ray Stevenson. Yeah.
Ray Stevenson, yeah.
That was it.
But that's the thing. It's a great example. That's the thing. Everyone talks about it. They want to hear about it first.
Yeah.
That's why this stuff gets pummeled out, even when it's not necessarily, you know, even the really good media outlets are guilty of it. BBC have done the same. They've got some really quite naff reporting of big events like Nickel Buddy. You get to a bit of a bigger debate here about what's right, wrong about media doing it. But your problem is you could almost go back to that kind of almost Game of Thrones era justice. You know what I mean? Where people dragging people through the streets.
Shame, ringing a bell.
Exactly. Whereas, you know, there's a really well established court system here that has, you know, all the right ways of going about investigating, the right ways of having evidence, calm, collected people that aren't shouting and going sideways. And I tell you, another good example is actually the Lisa Letby case. Is a great example of that. That's been going for years now, and they've been calmly, collectively bringing together lots of disparate evidence, and it's a months and months long case. It's a really unusual.
It's still going on, isn't it? The trial.
It's unusually long, but that's a calm, collected view. That whereas you could go both ways, but just looking at the media reports on her, you really could do, and that's not correct either. But interesting, there's a lot of media blackouts happened around that as well. A lot of detail of it wasn't released until closer to the court dates. Yeah, absolutely. And even her identity, I think, from what I recall, was masked for a good period of time until she got charged.
It didn't come out until she got charged and she was going to trial.
I think that's good.
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely. Yeah,
so that should be done, I think, in a lot more cases.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. And you've got to think about what do you want here? Do you want the UK public to be happy with how much information they know about her, or do you want those poor little babies to have actual justice by having her?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, it shouldn't really be about public opinion.
Not at all.
Exactly. No, you're right.
But people can't help but give their opinions, can they?
That was another thing I was going to say. People have opinions and they will share them, whether you like it or not.
Unfortunately, everyone's got a platform now.
That's the thing. Everyone's
like us.
Well, I've only got this one now. I've got rid of all the others. So.
Must be the best then.
No social media for me.
I don't blame you.
There
you go. I do want to know, I need to know, because you haven't covered this since you mentioned it before, but what is this vacuuming blood out of USB ports, man? What?
Is that even possible?
Oh, yeah.
Did it still work? Yeah.
Which one of us is that a question to?
I mean, well, feel free to chip in if you've been
privy to doing that.
Yeah. Pants I have. But...
Did it still work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Most electric stuff will work absolutely fine after you dried it all out. As long as you powered it on.
Been doused in blood.
Well, I think I told you this one before, but with especially mobile phone forensic kit, there's different types of brush depending on the type of substance that's ended up in the charging port.
you said substance. Yeah. I mean,
pass me over the Ket sponge, will you?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the term. You can arrange one of the podcasts if you prefer to, but nature's pocket.
Oh, yeah. Down these parts, we call it the Chatham pocket.
Oh, you're going to have to fill us in.
Me and Sarah just
take a wild guess of where a natural pocket would be.
Oh.
In a human being.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And some people have got two. I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you go to prison, obviously, you know, you need to keep in contact with your friends and family.
Do you know the thing that gets me the most about that is the mobile phones?
Yeah.
How?
Mobile phones are massive now.
Oh, they're not. If you, your good readers can probably search microphone. I think it's
called. Even a microphone's too big to be put in a natural pocket.
I agree.
God.
I'd just go without a phone. I just don't have to talk to anyone. It's not a problem.
I mean, I'm assuming they put it in like a bag or something.
You'd really
no,
hope so.
No, they don't.
You've got far too much faith in these people. No, go straight up.
Oh,
there.
It's going in raw. Like, there's nothing. Raw dog in the phone.
Well, this went downhill quick, didn't it?
I mean, like, it was about time. If anyone was going to lower the tone, it was going to be me. Actually, anyway. Yeah.
I did start it, to be fair. A bit. Sorry. Wow. About that.
I mean, the subject itself is not clean, is it?
I mean, no. I need to, I'm sorry, I know this is gross and grim, but I need to know more about the substances. So other than blood, are we talking saliva?
Poo.
Oh my God.
In a what? In a USB port?
Yeah. Well, if you insert said phone.
Oh, the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking, you know what? You said USB, I'm thinking laptop.
Oh, yeah. No, Sam's gone.
That would be an achievement, right?
Sam has fallen off the chair.
You imagine the prison guards would be like, you can keep the laptop. I'm not even taking it. It's just so impressive. You can have that.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, we're going to commute your sentence. That was so impressive.
Yeah. But yeah, tell you what, you've won a brand new Mac. Take me that. You give you.
Did you throw up in the bin then, Sam?
I need to know if anyone can possibly fit a laptop up there, to be honest.
No, it's not a laptop.
Sticky or something, you know what I mean? No,
Jesus.
No, talking.
Paul's gone now.
Can you imagine? All of a sudden.
Oh, my goodness. No, I can assure you I've not come across that before, I must admit.
That would be. Wow. Oh, literally, would not, mate.
Yeah, well done.
Well done.
What's the most interesting thing you found on an arrested subject?
Well, that's a good question.
It's a good question.
I can tell you the most interesting thing a suspect was doing when I arrested him.
Yeah, that'll do.
Yes, that'll do.
It'll lower the tone, unfortunately.
That's fine.
It's pretty much
lower than it's now.
Underneath the floor. You can say whatever you like. Say whatever you like.
So we're going lower than laptops up the bum.
It involves a laptop. No, so basically, I had to get hold of a chap's laptop whilst it was powered on, turned on, without him having the opportunity to turn it off so that we can do live forensics on it. And the best way to do that is to sneak into people's houses and whilst they're using said laptop. And it's key to make sure you're in there and they are going to be unlocked. So there are different things you can do to make sure they're unlocked in essentially the way you get into the house. But in this one, it wasn't quite as important. It was more nice to have, but not vital. So with this chap, he was in a one bed little bedsit type thing he lived in. And we got a key for his room because it was a shared accommodation type thing. Got a key from the reception desk type area, and very quietly put the key in the door and opened the door. And obviously, being a bedsit, you go straight into his bedroom. You can probably see where this is going already. Opened the key, door open, and the poor chap was in the middle of what lots of teenage gentlemen do in front of his laptop. And he didn't know what to do. He didn't know whether to cover himself up or to close his laptop. So he tried to do both, failed miserably, fell off the bed.
I thought you were going to say you just finished.
No.
Oh. Carried on.
Just carried on. I'm sure that would go through some people's minds, but no, he didn't.
Did he trap himself in the laptop?
That's what I thought you were
going to
say.
That's where I thought he was going.
No. Like that. He literally didn't know. Imagine it was, again, this is unfortunately not a video podcast, but he was trying to grab both at the same time and just fell off the bed, reaching across trying to do it, which was probably the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, dear.
He didn't lock the laptop. He didn't cover himself up, put it that way. But then
never forgetting that.
No. That's going to haunt him.
You've got awkward moment as well, then, where you've got to arrest this chap. So you need to get, for want a better term, hands on. There's three of us all there, in quite an awkward position. Like, right, you're going to calm down? Yeah. Right, we get your trousers pulled up? Yeah. Good. Right. Excellent.
God. Oh, God. Dear. Talk about a good way to make someone cooperate, though. He's probably so embarrassed. He was just
Caught
his pants down.
Literally.
Literally, yeah. Oh my god.
All Scott.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't even know where to go. I'm done.
It's horrendous.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Wow. This has been most fascinating. Thank you so much. I'm sure you've got plenty more stories. So there may even be a second episode with you.
Love to.
As long as you're happy to come back.
Oh, good speech. As you probably noticed, I forget lots of these stories, and then suddenly something will remind me of it, and it's amazing. Ross, you know, it's locked away in the depths of my memory for all the years.
Yeah. Maybe we could do a small series of 4 or 5 episodes. We could call it Story Time with Lewis. And we'll do them on Patreon. We'll just whack them on Patreon.
I love that idea. Story Time.
Just a short, like 15-minute. Yeah, you know, like little anecdote.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be great.
We could do a little Christmas special and everything, couldn't we?
Yes. A murder Christmas special. Why not?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, no, it's been a pleasure. Thank you ever so much for having me. It's been great.
Very well.
No, thank you.
Thanks for coming with regaling us with all your stories. Yeah. It's been interesting, informative, educating. I can't think of any other adjectives, unfortunately.
It's going to be a real shame when I shut this computer down and think of 50 more questions.
Save it for next time. There's always next time. Christmas special. And on that note, listeners, always remember to delete your Google history.